Coming up on Golf Today, 2 weeks and counting until the final men's major of the year. The field is almost set for Royal Troon with the usual suspects and some great stories as well. We'll dive in. And this week's PGA Tour site is where it all started in professional golf for one of the game's biggest stars. Jordan Spieth is back at the John Deere Classic for the first time in 9 years. We'll check in with him as he tries to once again find the magic. And speaking of returning, former world number one Jason Day hasn't played this event since 2011. What does he remember? We'll put him to the test. All that and much more coming up right now on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Hey there, busy day. Jimmy Roberts alongside Eamon Lynch. The Open getting the lion's share of the attention, of course, but there's a really big story in this new world of golf that seems to be getting overlooked these days.
And a big group of people who seem to be getting overlooked as well, Jimmy. We're permanently focused, I suppose, as most sports fans are, on the top of the food chain. But there's a lot of guys out there on the PGA Tour trying to get a seat at that feast table for next season on the PGA Tour, which is the top 50 in the FedEx Cup standings. Top 70 are the fully exempt players who then don't have to enter the fall series to jockey for position. And there are a lot of guys of note who are outside that list. You just mentioned one of them, Jordan Spieth. He's all the way down at 59th on that list. Adam Scott, 69. Ricky Fowler, 93rd. There's a lot of guys who have to make a move over the course of the next, we have 5 weeks, seven events between now and the start of the FedEx Cup playoffs. It's a narrow window for guys who need to make a move.
This stuff keeps changing, and I am trying to keep track of it. I just want to watch golf and enjoy the best players play, and that's seems to be the biggest challenge going forward these days. All right, lots going on. 16 spots earned yesterday in Open final qualifying, and in case you missed it, how about this one? At Dundonald Links in Scotland, Angel Hidalgo arrived at his final hole, the par 4 ninth, one shot out of a likely playoff for a spot in the field at Troon. The 26-year-old Spaniard, who's ranked 389th in the world, didn't just gain one shot. How about two of them? Holing out from 120 yards for eagle to shoot 369 and get in the clubhouse at 5-under, securing his first ever major championship start.
Dundonald Links was a place for another good story yesterday. Jack McDonald, who's a member at Barassi, less than 3 miles from Troon, he gained a spot in the Open in a three-man playoff. His grandfather actually played the famous duel in the Sun Open down the coast at Turnberry in 1977 and is an honorary member at Troon. McDonald played there as a kid and now he will play there as a competitor in the 152nd Open Championship. And to me, Jimmy, stories like yesterday and these two stories of Hidalgo and McDonald, to me, it almost makes an argument for Monday qualifiers for signature events. Just
wow.
If you're going to have an event that celebrates the best in the world, let's create at least a pathway, even if it's a narrow pathway, for these kind of stories, narratives of the Davids going up against the Goliaths. We're oversubscribed with Goliaths in those events and undersubscribed with Davids. And this is very much the nature of both the Open Championship and the US Open, where we saw last month at Pinehurst so many great storylines play their way into the event on golf's longest day. I think the more we can encourage that at the elite level of golf, the better, because the pathways are narrowing. They're narrowing even for people who hold PGA Tour cards in terms of the opportunities they're given. There are more and more limited field events. The pathway gets tougher for these guys to actually make it. Why not add a little bit of drama to these things as well? And you're going to get a loaded Monday qualifier at a signature event.
You think?
Because you're going to have guys who are high in the world rankings. I mean, Thomas Dietrich is not in the Open Championship. He's 50th in the official world golf rankings. You're going to have a lot of loaded guys try to play their way into these events.
Why do I sense there's going to be a column coming out of this? Or maybe there already has been, and I just haven't been reading carefully.
I'm writing it as I speak.
All right. You know, my thought is that we like stories of people who aren't supposed to win, and they eventually do. And we remember those stories. And you don't need to look back any further than 20 years ago at the place we'll be going in a couple of weeks, Troon. Todd Hamilton was ranked outside the top 50 in the world. He was a 500-to-1 shot to win the Open Championship. What does he do? He gets past Phil Mickelson down the stretch, and then he beats Ernie Els, a World Golf Hall of Famer, to claim the championship with a memorable, what was it, a hybrid from just off the green. So we like those stories. And, you know,
I'm
if we
sure
don't
Ernie
see
Ernie likes the story as much as we do. But
he got his, though. He eventually got his. But we like those stories. You know, as you say, the things that we don't see coming. And why not? Why not, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the more variety we can add to these events, the better. You know, Tommy Roy's got this great policy of if you're good enough to play in the Open, you're good enough to be shown on the broadcast. There are so many good stories that go along with that policy of showing the full rainbow spectrum of this game. And it's not just the top 50 players in the world right now. There's a lot of great storylines out there. The more of them we can get, the better, particularly these days.
I'm giggling. Tommy Roy getting a mention, a shout out on Golf Today. He'll appreciate that. All right, let's take a look back at the men's major season to this point in April. Scottie Scheffler won the Masters and with the win became the fourth youngest player ever to win two green jackets behind Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, and Seve Ballesteros. Not bad company. Then in May, it was the PGA at Valhalla where Xander Schauffele broke through for his first major. Schauffele closed with a clutch birdie on the 72nd hole to win by a single shot over Bryson DeChambeau.
And Bryson then went on and won his second U.S. Open at Pinehurst just a few weeks ago. Took the title by one over Rory McIlroy thanks to an all-time up and down from the bunker on the final hole to secure the win. That's why he is probably the most engaging man in the sport right now. And we're just 2 weeks away from the final major of the men's golf calendar this year as the Open heads to Royal Troon. Live coverage begins Thursday, July 18th on the networks of NBC USA and streaming on Peacock. So, Jimmy, the biggest storyline heading into the Open, and I do think it's just something of an embarrassment of riches that we have right now, and a lot of them would seem obvious, you know, that will Rory bounce back after what happened at Pinehurst? Will Scottie keep this all-time season going? To me, there are kind of two, and oddly both involve live players. Lynx golf is still the unsolved puzzle for Bryson DeChambeau, who has taken such a rigorous approach to every other aspect of the game. And he did finish top 10 at St. Andrews 2 years ago, but that's a golf course unusual on the open road in that it lends itself to this kind of bludgeoning of the golf ball. But otherwise, he's never actually had a top 30 finish in the Open. And in the last, he's tied for 33rd once, and that's the only time he's ever even broken the top 50 in the Open. And I do think it's a puzzle that it's going to be interesting to watch him tackle at Troon. But to me, the biggest story is John Rahm. And I know he withdrew from Pinehurst with a foot injury earlier that week, but he's been a competitive irrelevance in the major championships so far this year. A guy who won the Masters last year and contended in two other major championships and was such a storyline every time we went to a major championship. And the game just hasn't been there. Perhaps it's a coincidence that it's happened after he went to LIV Golf. You know, everyone has slump years and maybe this is just his. But to me, the storyline, a guy who finished tight second in the Open last year, going back there this year, having performed pretty miserably by his standards in major championships this year, to me, that's almost the storyline that I'm most curious about is what is John Rahm going to do at Troon?
You know, I too think that the biggest story going into the Open involves LIV, and it isn't necessarily about Rahm, and it isn't necessarily about DeChambeau or anybody else in particular. I think that golf, professional golf, men's professional golf right now is taking such an enormous public beating because they haven't come together and figured out a way to get all the best players in the world playing together. If a LIV player wins the Open Championship, it'll be the second consecutive major won by a LIV player. And I just think that the momentum will be so enormous for them to get a deal done. And if they don't have a deal done by then, I just think, you know, the game suffers enormously. So it doesn't really matter who it is. I just think if a LIV player wins, I just think things are only going to get worse.
I would differ on that. I think we've reached the point where what happens inside the ropes is less impactful than what's happening outside the ropes. I mean, we've seen LIV guys win majors with Kepka, with DeChambeau. We've seen guys win majors and then go to LIV with Rahm and Cam Smith. It didn't seem to have any kind of seismic impact. I do think John Rahm thought his leaving would be a seismic impact. He's on record as saying that. and it wasn't. I do think they're trundling along with this sort of deal talk, but what it's going to do is emphasize a dangerous reality for the PGA Tour, which is that they are in danger of becoming tennis, that there becomes four events a year where they're considered where everyone shows up. And I think that's a perception. I don't think it's quite the reality yet, but it's a perception that's taking root and that they need to be wary of.
Well, it's not an issue for this week because all the best players in the world will be in one place, or at least I should say in 2 weeks. All the best players in the world will be in one place and playing, so fans can enjoy that. When this narrative becomes significant is during the regular PGA Tour season, when people are tuning in, people who love golf on a week-to-week basis, and they are not seeing the man who just won the U.S. Open. They are not seeing the man, if a LIV player was to win at Troon, who won the Open Championship. Brooks Koepka, who won the PGA last year. I think that's when it becomes a problem. And I don't know about you, but for me, when I'm out there and I'm talking to people, it's still the first thing that people want to talk about. Is there going to be a deal soon? Mm-hmm. I'm so tired of this. I want to see the best players in the world play against each other every week.
That's true. I do think that's a sentiment that's growing. The flip side of that is if fans were as determined as we're told to see a John Rahm or a Bryson or a Brooks, they'd be watching LIV, but they're not doing that.
Well, that's a separate discussion because LIV's product isn't very good.
Exactly. And so it's not as though the audience wants them in one place, but the audience has determined that the place that they want them is in the PGA Tour because they're not pursuing them anywhere else. But this isn't really a problem for majors because what you're starting to see, we saw it at the PGA, we're going to see it at the US Open, is the majors trying where they can to carve out a pathway for LIV players. But the reality is right now there are no LIV players who ought to be there who aren't there.
Right.
Unless you're thinking Taylor Gooch deserves to be.
Well, listen, back to your point, there are 4 weeks a year where this is not an issue. And 4 weeks a year where I think people think back to the days of why they were really excited about watching the best players in the world play every week.
Yeah, and I suppose this comes down to this, always the divide in this game between the transient sports fan who's really paying attention to the major championships and the core fan who's paying attention on a week-to-week basis. And they're certainly not seeing as many of the top players as they want right now, but there are a lot of people who are paid a lot more than us to figure that one out, Jimmy.
Indeed.
I hope they figure it out soon. One of the guys who finished tied second in last year's Open at Royal Liverpool, Sepp Straka. He's also the defending champion this week at the John Deere Classic. We're going to hear from the pride of Austrian golf coming up next.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on golf today, the PGA Tour heads to the Quad Cities this week for its annual stop. You can catch live first round coverage of the John Deere Classic from the TPC Deer Run tomorrow, 4 o'clock Eastern Time. Let's flash back to last year when Austrian via Athens, Georgia's Sepp Straka caught fire in the final round, a 9 under 62. This despite a double bogey at the last. Straka with the win by two over Brendan Todd and Alex Smalley. And for more on this year's John Deere Classic, we head out to TPC Deer Run and say hello to our own Amy Rogers, who had a chance to catch up with the defending champion this morning. Hi, Amy.
Hey there, Jimmy. Well, Sepp Straka doesn't feel like there's a huge buzz surrounding him in his return here to the John Deere Classic as the defending champion, but he's certainly a lot busier with a lot more media demands and requests of his time as he returns here to TPC Deer Run. Now, his victory here last season marked the second of his career and became a major springboard for Straka into the closing stretch of the 2023 season. With his victory here, he advanced to the Open Championship, got a spot in that field where he finished in a tie for second for his best career finish in a major championship. He got into the Tour Championship at the end of the season and played his way onto the European Ryder Cup team. And Straka said earlier today that he didn't think any of that would be possible if it weren't for his win here at the John Deere Classic last year. Now, after his victory last season, he said that he didn't have a lot of confidence growing up. And when I spoke to him earlier today, I asked him how that win last year impacted not just his confidence, but also his career.
Yeah, it's done a lot for the career. You know, I kind of was playing some good golf coming into here. Won here, then went and finished second in the Open. Got to Atlanta, played in the Ryder Cup. So it was a big step in my year last year. It was incredible. But confidence, I don't know, that stuff changes every day, so every shot really. So yeah, I don't try to put too much emphasis into the confidence part.
You looked pretty confident in the final round here last year, final round 62, to come out and get the win. What did you learn that you have to do well around here at TPC Deer Run to be successful?
You got to give yourself a lot of looks, and then you got to convert on a lot of those looks. So yeah, you just got to be kind of always keep the foot on the gas. And I know I had like a 4-shot lead going into the 13th hole or something like that. I can't remember exactly how it played out, but you just never, you can't really ever be too comfortable, because people can make a lot of runs quickly, and yeah, it makes it exciting to watch and play this tournament.
You've had 4 top 10s so far this season. How would you assess where your game is at coming into this week?
It's been good, yeah. I've played really well. Putter's been hot and cold, so it's been trending pretty well, though. We've done some good work, and yeah, hopefully can take advantage of a good putter and give myself a lot of chances here today.
What is some of that work that you put in with your putting?
A little bit of stroke, a little bit of technique. Just got a little bit off, wasn't using my body basically to move the putter. I was getting a little armsy, and just trying to dial that back in and get tightened up for this week.
You heard Straka speak about how his victory here last year influenced obviously his life on the course, but he's had some big changes off the course as well. Steph and his wife Paige have a 6-month-old little boy, and unfortunately the little guy's been battling a series of ear infections of late as he's been traveling with them. So a lot of sleepless and tough nights for this group, but Straka says that becoming a dad has been amazing. It's made him a lot more efficient with his time and practicing and preparing to defend his title here this week in Illinois. Jimmy?
Oh. Ear infections with a little one, that brings back, I should say, some bad memories. Amy, thanks very much. When Golf Today rolls on, we're taking a trip down memory lane and having some fun as one of the headliners in this week's John Deere Classic Field returns after a long hiatus. Just how well does Jason Day remember his first time in the Quad Cities? You'll find out next. Back on Golf Today, another reminder that the PGA Tour returns to action tomorrow at 4 o'clock Eastern with live first-round coverage of the John Deere Classic right here on Golf Channel. A quick look at some of the notables in the field this week. And there you see Jason Day, who hasn't played here in quite some time. Well, Amy Rogers put him to the test on what he remembers.
Well, Jason, it's been a while since you've been here at the John Deere Classic. 2011, the last time that you teed it up here. So we are going to take a little trip back in time, see how well you remember some of those early days in your career here at the John Deere Classic and what you remember from back in 2011. So we'll start off. You made your PGA Tour debut here.
Yes.
In what year?
2006. And I made the cut. I had a really shocking, I shouldn't say I had a shocking front side. I ended up shooting, had a really good backside, and then ended up making the cut. I think I finished in the 50s, I think, you know. But I was so happy because then I had, you know, 6 other starts after that. And I was trying to get my PGA Tour card through playing 7 tournaments and seeing if I could get it that way. But yeah, a lot of good memories coming back here.
Nice. Do you remember what your paycheck was, that first check?
Oh, I do not. No, unfortunately not. I think I was happy. What was it?
$8,200.
It's a lot. I thought it was around $3,000, but you know, I just found another $5,000 on top of that, which is great. So I'm happy about that. Yeah, that's good. That, a lot more than I earned before then. So,
what is your best finish here at TPC Deer Run?
I don't know. 30th.
No, much better. Tie for 15th.
Okay, that's good. That's like another positive, which is good. I wonder what I shot. Do you know what I shot?
I don't know what you shot, but you did it twice, both 2009 and 2010.
Okay. Why don't I come back here more often? If I'm finishing there, that's great.
All right. The last time you played here in 2011, who won the NBA title that year?
Who won the NBA title? I remember. No, that was Orlando Magic were good when they had Dwight Howard. I know they went deep, but that was like late 2000s. I'm guessing. I'm trying to think. No, it wasn't Cleveland. Oh, dang, you're going to make me guess here. I'm going to say it had to be in the Lakers.
Dallas Mavericks.
Ah! Dang.
And you think these guys aren't competitive.
Oh, okay. My God.
All right, here's another one for you. 2011, most popular song.
2011, most popular song. You got to give me a hint. Was it a pop song or was it...
Pop song, female artist.
Someone that's relevant today? I don't listen to a lot of female singers. Hold on. 2011. Was it Britney Spears or something like that? Was she way before that?
Adele, Rolling in the Deep. That was the big one that year.
It doesn't feel like that's 2011. It feels like it was only like 5 years ago.
I know, I thought the same thing when I looked it up. It made me feel old. Okay, you were runner-up in which two majors in 2011?
Augusta and the US Open.
That's
and
right.
I lost to Rory by 8, I believe. Yeah. I actually, was that the year at Congressional? I'm pretty sure it was the year at Congressional where I lost by 8 shots. I think in the last 50 years before that, like, I would have won it. Like, I think I would have lost the US Open twice. I think that's what they were saying. Because I actually played really good golf, but I mean, leading into that, and I almost didn't play Augusta that year, which was kind of funny enough, and then ended up going out and finishing second, which was nice.
Yeah, you started off really well in that Masters in 2011. You recorded a round that matched the lowest by a first timer there. Do you remember what it was?
64.
What round?
Second round, yeah, because I was playing with Rory and Ricky, and Rory I think he shot 7 under the first day. And Ricky was playing some solid golf too. And then I still remember it because I got a standing ovation walking up the 18th green. So good memories back then.
That is a great memory. Yeah. Well, thank you for playing along. We had a little fun. Great to see you back here at the John Deere Classic.
Yeah, appreciate it. Good to be back. I'm looking forward to a good week.
Jason's like all of us. His memory is in and out these days. His first round tee time is 1:49 p.m. Eastern. He's alongside Lucas Glover and the defending champion, Sepp Straka.
Don't you think that Jason Day should have gotten some like lovely parting gifts for playing or something like that? I thought that was coming.
I don't know if he scored high enough on that test. He doesn't remember the tournaments that really matter, though. He remembered Augusta. He remembered Congressional at U.S. Open. Where were you in 2011, Jimmy?
Ooh, I might have been right here, actually, although we weren't in this facility yet. 2011? I don't know. I thought we were 20 years ago. I was right here. I was working at NBC, getting ready, I suppose. We were a year out from the Olympic Games, which would have been, what, London?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, London, the London Games. I have no idea what number games that was for me. I'm about to go to my 20th, so I've lost count.
Well,
how about you?
Well, I was where I am right now, which is searching on a range, blaming teachers, veering between... ecstasy and despair, always thinking the best days are ahead, never quite finding them.
Well, I will say this. I was so disgusted with my golf back then that I actually wrote a book. It was called Breaking the Slump. I was so despondent about the way I played that I went in search of trying to find the solution. And I talked to great players. I talked to a former president, George Herbert Walker Bush. I talked to a gold medalist in the Olympic Games, Dan Jansen, because I figured there are two types of golfers in the world, right? Those who've had a slump and those who are gonna have a slump. And my golf actually got better.
Maybe I should write a book, just blame all the teachers who are responsible for my woes. Can't be me, Jimmy.
You sure?
I'm pretty positive of that. That's all I've got left.
Well, I was gonna say, that's not what I hear. All right, well, George Savarikas will be part of the broadcast team in the Quad Cities as we take a look at this week in golf, BMW International Open overseas and the John Deere Classic as we have been speaking. But George Savarikas is out in the Quad Cities and he joins us now. George, hey, we've been talking a little Jason Day, a little Jordan Spieth, two headliners there. Spieth, this is where it really all got started for him, and he's come back after not having been there for a while. I'd imagine there are a lot of eyes on him.
Yeah, Jimmy, he's the showstopper here at the John Deere Classic, and one of my first weeks working at Golf Channel was the 2013 John Deere Classic. Remember Jordan getting his first win as a teenager, and then my last trip here was 2015 when he committed to play in this event for the third straight year, won it a second time, all the hype and the amazing major season he had had, winning the Masters and the U.S. Open, the John Deere, leading to the Open. So for him to return 9 years later, they had always used 2015 as the benchmark for ticket sales, revenue, charitable donations. That was up until last year when they beat those records. And in talking with tournament director Andrew Lehman leading up to this week at the John Deere Classic, they're looking to beat last year. So it's going to be a banner year for the John Deere Classic, thanks in part to Jordan Spieth returning, as well as another former world number one in Jason Day.
George, how much is the Open on the minds of people in Illinois, not just guys like Spieth and Day who are trying to find a little bit of form because they know they're going there, but a lot of guys in the field probably looking at those two spots that are available at Troon for competitors this week at the John Deere?
There's a lot of opportunity for the players in the field this week if they want to try and punch their ticket to the 152nd playing of the Open. For the big names who've already secured a spot, of course you want to try and find some form, assuming you're leading into next week's Genesis Scottish Open. I think there's some players who may take a breather and then tee it up at the Open, but it's that part of the season where you want to find your game, and there's a lot at stake with not just the Open coming up, but then the FedEx Cup playoffs beyond that. So I think it's a very important week for guys here at the John Deere Classic.
You know, we love these events, which are the final qualifiers or the final opportunity for players to get into a major. For years before Augusta, it was Atlanta, then it went to Texas, and this event has always had a special place. We've been batting around here in the studio the idea of what the biggest story is going to into the Open Championship, I should say. What do you think? You cover an awful lot of golf.
I mean, it's got to be Rory McIlroy, and we haven't seen him since the U.S. Open. He's going to return at the Genesis Scottish Open to defend there. For Rory, I think it could be an opportunity like 2011, where he had that heartbreak at the Masters, bounced right back at the U.S. Open, and was able to change the narrative and win his first major. The U.S. Open at Pinehurst No. 2 had to be the most crushing defeat of his career, with how it happened on the 16th and 18th, the 70th. And 72nd hole. If Rory somehow were to snap the major drought, then it's a big shift of, okay, this was a massive speed bump that he was able to overcome. If he doesn't show good form, then the whole storyline leading into 2025 is going to be another year in his rearview mirror without a major, and everyone's going to point to what unfolded in at the U.S. Open at Pinehurst number two. So I think Rory, to me, has to be the headline story, and right next to him, Bryson DeChambeau and the major season he's put together with that sixth place finish at the Masters, runner-up at the PGA Championship, a win at the U.S. Open. If we see him seriously contend or win a second major, it would be the best major season since maybe 2018 with Brooks Koepka winning two, or you could go even further back to Jordan Spieth in 2015 as the last guy before Brooks to win two majors. And Jordan's the best major season we had seen since Tiger in 2000. So I think those are the two storylines that are at the top of my list.
We're getting really close to crunch time for the season as a whole now, George. Not just the last major in the men's game coming up, but also on the cusp of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Who do you think has the most to prove in a way for the season? Not necessarily even on the PGA Tour. Is it Jon Rahm on LIV? Is it Victor Hovland on the PGA Tour? Is it Spieth? Who really needs to make a statement in your mind over these next few weeks?
I mean, that's a really good question, because the guys who, regardless of what they do the rest of the season, will say 2024 was a success. I mean, clearly Bryson on LIV, Scottie Scheffler, if he doesn't touch a club the rest of the year, it's the best season we've seen in 15 plus years, with having six wins and a major. And I think you could say that for Xander Schauffele, getting the monkey off his back and winning his first major. Those guys are set. In the something to prove category, I would agree with Jon Rahm. It's been a lost year. Part of it's been because of injury. He's felt that he's played pretty good golf on LIV, but we haven't seen anything from the majors. If he's to lose an entire year of his prime without contending in a major, I think Jon Rahm would be the guy that wants to not only play well at the Open, but play well the rest of this year and really not necessarily validate the move in his mind, but show that, hey, I haven't lost the peak of my powers that we saw a year ago in winning his second major and having four wins on the PGA Tour. And he probably thinks that form isn't too far away. But for us, who put so much additional weight on the majors, it's been a very different guy from 2023 to 2024 with Jon Rahm.
George, let me get you out of here on this one. We're also fast approaching the Olympic Games, where Bryson DeChambeau, despite that spectacular season that he's having that you mentioned and outlined, he will not be playing. Where do you think the Olympic golf competition sits in the fans of pro, excuse me, in the minds of fans who watch the game?
I think it's going to grow and evolve over time, where they place added importance on securing a medal, specifically a gold medal. I think, and Jimmy, I mean, you've covered this game a long time, very well traveled. You know how important it is to nations that are outside North America or even outside the U.S. when it comes to not just competing in the Olympics, but if you win a medal, that's something that's celebrated for the rest of your life. So I think it's hard to say, okay, where does this stack up between winning a major, winning a Tour Championship or FedEx Cup Championship? How do you put that in the pecking order? But I think for international players, it almost has its own significance that carries so much weight for the rest of their careers, to be celebrated not just as a medal winner, but as a sportsman in that nation. And I think for U.S. fans, the more that we see golf as part of the Olympic program in the summer, when it returned in 2016, it had that novelty factor. It had been more than 100 years since we saw a golf competition. In Tokyo, it had a different vibe. The Olympics were delayed a year. There were weird hours here. I think Le Golf National, where we saw a Ryder Cup contested 6 years ago, and it carries some familiarity for golf fans, specifically of the DP World Tour, where they see that year in and year out. I think golf's really going to have a big splash with a push towards 2028. So I do think that that's going to become something that players not only strive for but cherish if they're able to stand on the podium.
And, of course, the defending gold medalist will be back again, the American Xander Schauffele, fresh off his first major championship. George, at it, Deer Run, thanks very much for joining us. Have a great week.
Well, TPC Deer Run was the launch pad for the golden child. He's back in the field this week searching for some form, and we're going to give a temperature check to Jordan Spieth's game right after this short break.
And welcome back to Golf Today. Let's flash back to the 2013 John Deere Classic. Jordan Spieth won in a five-hole playoff over Zach Johnson and David Hearn. But to get into the playoff, he holed a greenside bunker shot on the 72nd hole. Spieth became the youngest PGA Tour winner since 1931. I think it was Ralph Gouldall.
2 years later, he again demonstrated the flair for the dramatic. Became the hallmark of his career. Third round, par 5, 17th hole. From 106 yards, he holed out for eagle. He went on to claim his fifth PGA Tour victory and his second John Deere Classic the following day. And here are his career results in that John Deere Classic. He's only actually made four starts. He found his footing in 2012, made the cut, two of the three since, two wins, and then a tie for seventh back in 2014, making a return now for the first time in 9 years.
All right, time now for the CDW Intelligence Center as we go beyond the scorecard using ShotLink statistics. And this helps us take a look at, Jordan and, how he's done this season and, off the tee, which had been a problem for him in the past. He's really been kind of consistent, but you take a look at that second category, the approach 112th. And then a couple of categories down below there, Eamon, where those had been where he had made his bread and butter. Around the green, he has really been pedestrian.
Yeah, and then you can look back at his peak year, 2015, when he won two majors, and he looked pretty solid from one end of the bag to the other. Second, strokes gained total. But to me, this is Jordan Spieth in a nutshell here. This is the experience of watching Jordan Spieth, where you really seesaw through the emotions, and the statistics have always seesawed with Jordan Spieth as well. You know, he is 16th in strokes gained off the tee right now. But for three consecutive seasons, from 19 to 21, he never cracked the top 135 in that category. He's 112th in strokes gained approach. 2 years ago, he was 31st in that. You look at the around the green, he was 6th 3 years ago. He's now barely in the top 80 on the putting, which is solid, I guess, for him right now at 80th. He was 155th if you go back just 2 years. There's this constant thing with Jordan Spieth. And this year, I think, is something of an outlier. He does have the wrist injury that he's keeping fairly quiet about, but it clearly is troubling him. And it's showing in the results. What you just saw statistically does not lead, generally speaking, to a lot of high finishes on tour. And his last one was a tie for 10th, his last top 10. And that was at Valero the week before the Masters. And he hasn't had anything since then. That was 10 events ago. He's gone six straight majors without a top 20 finish. Hasn't been in the top 40 in a major this season.
Yeah, listen, he is definitely one of the streakier players we've seen. But, you know, golf is a game where, as they say, you have to play your misses. And I don't think that he is all that unusual. They say also that you play to the back of your baseball card. You are who you are. Well, this is who Jordan Spieth has been. He's been occasionally brilliant, and he's, you know, struggled with various parts of his game. But it makes me think of the irony is that I remember we covered him in 2009 when he won in the first of his two junior championships. It was out here at Trump Bedminster in New Jersey, not far away. There was another player in the field that year who nobody really took very much notice of. But these days, people may know a little bit more about him, but not as a golfer. It's Jeff McNeil, who, of course, is on the New York Mets and sometimes second baseman. But Jeff McNeil, 2 years ago, not only won the National League batting title, 2 years ago, Jeff McNeil actually had the best batting average in Major League Baseball. Last year, this year, Jeff McNeil has struggled terribly. He just can't find a hit. Now, there are plenty of Met fans out there who say, woe is me, that's just kind of the way things go. But I think there's a similarity in golf and hitting. You know, it's a streaky, it can be a streaky thing, even though you do generally play to the back of your baseball card.
Yeah, and you also, in this game, I think the great players win ugly, or they know how to win ugly. I mean, Jordan Spieth won the Open from the driving range at Birkdale.
Literally.
He won the U.S. Open with that horrendous play on the 18th hole on the final day, which was just upstaged by Dustin Johnson missing a shorter putt. So, you know, there, he has found a way to get the ball in the hole, even when it seems to be going sideways. But when you even flash back a couple of years when he was teetering off the cliff tops at Pebble Beach, playing a shot out there, there is no more entertaining guy to watch in a game of golf than Jordan Spieth. And blessed be the microphones that are following him and Michael Greller around, because it really is like listening into a therapy session when those two start talking.
You know, it's funny, when we're up in the booth and we're calling golf and Jordan comes on, you know, you just don't really need to say very much because he's going to tell you everything you need to know. That discussion between him and Greller is always entertaining. But I think the thing that a lot of people want to know at this point is, is he ever going to get back? Are we ever going to see the Jordan Spieth of 2015 again? You mentioned the wrist injury. It's been lingering for a couple of years now, and it's clearly bothered him. I think that is going to be a central issue in, you know, what's going on with his golf game and whether or not he'll be able to get back.
Yeah, once you start to see an elite athlete get injured, it puts everything else into doubt. If he's given, let's assume, full health, I would be astonished if you didn't see Jordan Spieth win again. And I get that tournaments are hard to win. I get that majors are difficult to win. But he's an extraordinarily opportunistic player who seems to find what a lot of guys can't in the heat of pressure, which is the clarity. The fact, you know, we can laugh about him playing from the driving range at Birkdale. He didn't hit his ball there. That's where he took his drop, because he had the clarity in that moment to try to figure out what's his pathway forward in the heat of pressure. And you got to pity Matt Kuchar. He had the lead that point. He played under par from that point on and still lost to Jordan Spieth, who went on that heater over those last few holes. But Spieth has that intangible that matters most, which is the ability to win when things aren't necessarily going your way, to scratch it out over the closing holes in the biggest tournaments under the greatest pressure.
And I think there's another factor too. Jordan Spieth is one of the more likable players out there. People really, really like him. You've never really seen him blow his stack, despite some of the terrible things that have happened. I mean, we go back to the 12th hole at Augusta when, you know, he had the Masters again in his hands and it just slipped away. We've never really seen him behave in a way that's cringeworthy. He's easy to root for, and I think that plays into the fact of why he has always been such an enormously popular player, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter what the struggles are. He's kind of like Ricky Fowler in that sense. You don't see him throw clubs. You don't see him flip off the fans. You don't see him do anything that's less than professional.
Yeah. All right, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. That was the CDW Intelligence Center. Well, we're back on Golf Today. On Sunday at the Dow Championship, a unique team event on the LPGA Tour, it was a Taiya Titicum who sank a birdie on the 72nd hole that would ultimately be enough for a one-shot win. Titicum teamed up with Ronan Yin as Team Jin and Ronick. And yesterday, they joined us on Golf Today. Team Golf, there's two ways to look at it. You can say, well, maybe there's less pressure because you have someone there to support you, or maybe there's more pressure because there's someone there that you can let down. It is, week to week, a solitary game. Which way do you look at it?
I think it's, wow, yeah. That's a good question, yeah. It seemed like a rest pressure for me, and also it's food pressure for me too, because like, I trying to do better, what to do, yeah, you know, like don't put a work on her much. So I think pretty much on rest pressure, I guess, having her by my side, and then we're just like really comfortable to hit the shot, really comfortable to, you know, like if we have a bad shot or we don't play really good on that hole, we still have someone who been there and then still got your back, kind of like that.
Ronan, how did this team come together? How did you guys decide that this was going to be the partnership that you wanted to take into that tournament last week?
So I guess it's Gino asked me last year, November, because we're having a Callaway shooting together, and then when we have a lunch break, and she just like asked me, hey, are you going to play down next year? I was like, not sure, because I don't have a partner back then. And then she asked me, should we just play together? I was like, yeah. And that's how we team up.
Jin and Ronick. All right, let's take a look at who's in the race to the CME Globe. And there are the standings. Nelly Korda, the defending gold medalist, by the way, at the Olympic Games, just absolutely boat racing the field with her six wins this year. You see Yuka Saso further down, the winner of the U.S. Open earlier this summer at the Lancaster Country Club. Allie Ewing also on that list in fifth place. She was runner-up last week with Jennifer Kupcho.
And now for the 19th hole, and this might look like a place you'd expect to see Jordan Spieth playing from in a round of golf, but the attire should give it away. This was a promotional event during the John Deere Classic. He's out there with the big rigs and a patriotic chap alongside him to drive him back to wherever that ball just went.
Here's my question. We have to look closely. Do we think that might be Michael Greller?
I don't see that being something Greller is just going to put on for a casual promotional event. An interesting anniversary today, Jimmy. It was 19 years ago today that Tiger Woods became the first man to crest $50 million in earnings on the PGA Tour. Scottie Scheffler has made that in the last 2 years out here. In fact, Scottie's made $63 million in the last 2.5 years. This is a changed game.
You know, it's funny. I think that it's ironic that with everything going on in golf, I think we had to get about 3/4 of the way through the show before we even mentioned Scottie Scheffler's name. And considering the year he's having, that's remarkable.
Well, that's what happens when Scottie takes a week off. But hopefully he can avoid the local police force in Troon as well and have a fairly unmolested pathway towards the weekend at the Open Championship.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
It's been a blast. Enjoyed it.
All right.